There's so many levels of leadership, but as a brand manager, as a brand leader, you have to be able to lead cross-functionally across different teams. You have to be able to inspire, engage them, and have them help you towards your plan. And I think that cross-functional leadership, even now, it's so crucial. The leaders who are successful, they're just able to have that natural collaboration and suaveness to get things done without creating much friction.
Explore the minds and marketing strategies behind today's winning brands and businesses. Tap into the power of the creator economy with Earned by Creator IQ. Here's Connor Begley.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Earned. Today, I've got Amina Pasha on the show, who's the CMO of Thrive Market. Welcome to the show, Amina.
Hi, Connor. Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here with you.
I had a lot of fun looking into your background. It's really impressive what you've both personally accomplished and then what Thrive's accomplished as well.
Thank you so much. I feel equally honored to be here as well. And I've seen a lot of your podcasts and heard a lot of them. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
I think the concept for Thrive is so cool and so innovative. Can you tell people a little bit about what that is, just for those that don't know?
Yeah, sure. So Thrive Market is a mission-based membership online company. And our mission is all about making healthy living easy, affordable, accessible nationwide. We are about a 9-year-old company, so it's not surprising if many folks have not heard about us. And I think what's really unique is this consumer insight that it was based on. The founders really took an understanding that healthy living in America has become such a privilege, and it really should be a priority. And if you look at the modern conscious consumer, what healthy is today is so different than what it used to be before. And it's also unique to each individual. So when I take my own family, I think about my husband, he has his needs. He wants a basically like high protein diet. I want low sugar, low carb. My son just wants tasty all the time. And Thrive understood that there are going to be different needs by different consumer segments. And so what's really unique about our site is within seconds, you can filter by your lifestyle choices. So if you want low sugar, gluten-free, low carb, within seconds, the entire website curates the portfolio. And we only carry the highest quality within every single category that we offer. And so whether you want organic groceries, supplements, beauty products, et cetera, we really find what is unique about you and your lifestyle and tailor to. And to this day, no retailer is able to match that concept that we have. And so we're really excited about it. And the other big aspect about it is that we make it affordable. And we realize right now with the recession and the economy, that when you think organic and you think sustainable, the immediate shock you get is that it's going to be expensive. And for us, we really aim to keep our prices up to 30% cheaper than the comparative retail store. And this all ladders up to the mission of making healthy living accessible. Like, it shouldn't just be the 1% who can be healthy. It should be available to all Americans. And that's also why I joined, because it felt like such a bigger life calling to be able to have this type of mission-based membership available to Americans.
And what was it that drew you to these kind of mission-based businesses? Because you were part of Procter & Gamble for a long time. What was it that attracted you to these kind of mission-based companies?
Yeah, it's a great question. It is a life-changing event, I think, happens and you start reevaluating all your choices. So I was actually expecting my first, and I was out on maternity leave. And it's a crucial time in your life where you're rethinking all the choices you're making, the products you're putting in and on your body, what you're eating. And it also made me think about my career. And I had spent about almost a decade and a half at P&G. I had worked across big brands and done both global roles and US roles. I'd worked in Pampers, Pantene, Crest, Oral-B, you name it. And it started making me think, am I going to be doing this for the next 15 years of my career, which I totally could have done. And I have many coworkers who have had tremendously successful careers. But I started to think differently. And I started to say, where can I drive more impact? What do I really want to do for the next 15 years of my life? And I also didn't want to throw away everything I had learned. I'd spent about half my career in beauty and then the other half in baby. And here was this company, Honest, basically in baby and beauty, female founder led, mission-based, yet I was expecting. And so I told them, this is the worst possible timing. So they waited for me to have my baby, and then they called me back. And believe it or not, I went for an interview when I had a 3-month-old. And it was definitely something, I don't know how I pulled out. My husband said, I'll take the kid, you go. And it was a flight I'll never forget. First time mom going in, and I met with the founder, Jessica, and the new leadership team. And it just struck such a chord that I remember telling my manager, who my current manager at P&G, who I had a lovely relationship, very strong relationship with. And as he kept talking me through it, he goes, "This is not a financial decision for you, is it?" And I'm like, "No, it is not a financial decision. This is a life decision." And it really was on every aspect of career. And it was also important for me and my family to be in a much larger city where we had more friends and family. I'm originally from Pakistan. So it fit in so many levels, even just not just the career, which of course was a huge part, but from a life standing perspective. And we've been here now in LA for 5 years too. And so all of those reasons, it just fell into place. And then the shift from Thrive Market was quite, again, another calling. I just happened to meet Nick Green, the founder. I had never worked on food, yet I was in DTC, in e-commerce now at Honest. And we just had a profound conversation on the trade-offs with healthy. Like, why can't healthy be tasty? And why can't healthy be easy? Why is it so complicated? Why can't we make it easy? Why can't we make it affordable? And he was already doing all of that, yet not communicating it. He was not, they just hadn't done any marketing. They'd never done PR or done brand building. And the conversation just felt like another calling, that this would be taking my mission impact to the next level, because food, think about it, what's going directly in your body and how we can drive access to healthy living. And it has been an immense experience for me to have then come to Thrive. So that's the two callings I've had and why I made these changes and moves.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, both in the evolution of you as a person, like the evolution of your kids, right? You're starting to think about what they're eating, what they're consuming, how to make it more reasonable. That's something that we're going through, right? We've got young kids too. Going back to Jessica and Honest, I think it's a really unique company in that not only she obviously was the face of the brand, but is like deeply connected with the brand itself, both in terms of the time that she spends, like she's interviewing candidates, obviously deeply involved. One, what was it like to work with her? Just generally curious. And then two, how did you think about the integration of her with the brand, right? Like, how did you think about elevating somebody as the face of the brand on a consistent basis? Like, what was the blocking and tackling there?
Yeah, again, very great question. Firstly, I was so impressed by her. I actually did have my interview with her and it went on much longer than I think both of us expected. So it went on for like, I still remember an hour long conversation. And she's not a classically trained marketer, yet she is so smart. Her gut and instinct in marketing and creative and thinking big is profound. And she's also a very nonlinear thinker because she's never had like that structured kind of what I would say, like that P&G thinking. She's a truly modern creative and thinker that I was actually very inspired by her and how she had failed so many times actually before Honest actually got funding and accepted. And yet she never gave up. She was so determined to make this actually come to existence. And she was one of the first people to actually see the need and necessity because she had the allergic reactions herself. So incredibly talented woman, very smart, definitely very wired into the business. It was something that you have to understand. I had never worked in a founder-driven business. And so founders, a lot of them, it's about building trust and having that trust with them and working alongside with them. And I see that with both Jessica and also with Nick Green. So they are intensely involved. But as you build that trusting relationship, they give you a lot of freedom and space on where you can play and where you want to take. You have to step in areas where you're uncomfortable. Beauty was a whole different ball game where we actually had to sit down and recreate a lot of the things that we had already launched. We were at a point where we were going to get shelved out of Target. So it was rethinking the proposition. She was clearly the face and she should be the face of marketing. If there was obviously a natural integration, she is a beauty guru and junkie. And so how do we bring her not just as the face, but behind the brand? What is the Honest Beauty brand going to be about? How does it tie into Honest? There were a lot of strategic questions we had to answer and work with her together. But yet we also had this celebrity at our undertaking and secret weapon. And we rethought through what the brand positioning, the packaging, the pricing, and we really wanted to make clean beauty accessible too. So yeah, there was a lot of block and tackling, actually, my first, I'd say, year to 18 months there to do. And also learning from her just as much as she was learning from me and getting value from me on like CPG and brand building and whatnot. It was an incredible experience.
She seems like a really, just a genuinely good person, right? And I think that's part of the reason that people have been so supportive of her. Let's talk quickly. You kind of mentioned You know, she hadn't been classically trained at P&G. And I've been on this run. I don't know what it is. I've had several P&G heritage people on or recorded recently. And I'm really curious. Obviously, the world's changed a lot, right? P&G in its early days, I think, really pioneered mass marketing in a lot of ways, right? Obviously, times have changed. But I think that P&G has continued to remain as somewhat of a finishing school across CPG, where it's almost like a stamp of approval once you make it through there as a marketer, right? I'm curious, what is it about P&G that makes it such a good training ground for people in marketing? And then separately, you know, you were there for 15 years. How did you see the organization adapt to a world that when you started didn't really have Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or all these digital channels that now exist? How did it go through that evolution?
I actually never did my MBA, which shocks a lot of people. Like, can you be a CMO without getting an MBA? And yeah. I think the loophole was P&G for me, because P&G essentially gave me the MBA without an MBA, because they train you from the day you walk in to be a general manager. And I'll share my story because it'll tell you how profound the experience was for me. I was a new ABM on Pantene, and my boss was leaving for leave because he was getting married. So he was literally waiting for me to come on so he could go. And a weekend, he's gone. I am managing this brand, and the brand was in deep trouble. So our market share was declining. We were not doing well. And I remember I had my first executive meeting with the leadership, and I had to explain what's going on with my brand. Why was my brand struggling so much? And the meeting did not go well because I was a week in the role, and my budget got cut. And I got I remember over $1 million of my budget was frozen, because at that time, my GM was like, you're accountable for the P&L. And if you cannot turn around your brand, I cannot allow you to spend. Because clearly the marketing is not working. And oh my God, it was that like an eye-opening experience. I mean, talk about you walk into work and this is what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And like, and I'm not even, I don't even have an MBA, so I'm still trying to learn the P&L.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It got me so wired the right way that I have to figure out what's wrong with my business, what's wrong with the consumer I'm targeting, why is this marketing not working? And I did started doing all these data deep dives. And the biggest insight that came out of all of this deep dives that I was doing was that 2/3 of our consumer was under the age of 24. Yet the country I was working, this is back in Pakistan, was grouped in Europe, where the average consumer was like middle-aged, 40-year-old woman, very different hair texture, and completely mismatched between the audience we're targeting to and the proposition that we're marketing and the actual product line. So we had to make some dramatic changes. We had to change our formulation. We moved it to Asia, which was not like, this is not an overnighter. But in the interim, we had to dramatically start changing our marketing and start marketing younger, figuring out what messages were relevant. And so being a young woman, I could immediately connect strength of hair and all of these things and think about the media planning. Everything changed. I'm sharing this story because it teaches you, P&G taught me to think about my business like a founder, to think about the consumer is truly a boss. That's the P&G philosophy. Consumer is boss, right? You don't really serve your GM, you serve your consumer. And to be that constant advocate and fight for change, which was not easy. We were changing supply chain. We were changing marketing. We were telling them, we don't want any of these global ads. We're going to take these ads. We're going to make local ads. We're going to do all this stuff. And be able to then champion that change to then drive business results, which we were able to do and turn around the brand. But it just grounded you so much on solving real key business issues, real key consumer challenges. And I think that skill set you can take to any business and be successful. If you know your business and you know your consumer, guess what? You can figure out how to creatively solve that problem. And I think that's the difference between P&G marketers and I guess other marketers, is that they are trained to think like a GM and think holistically about the business, not just the marketing. Marketing is one aspect of the business, and you just have to be that. The other aspect that P&G taught me really very important, within my first few months, my marketing director asked me, what have you learned? And wow, it's like, oh my God, learned a lot. But he's like, how have you learned to do this? And I remember saying the power of teamwork, but that is so, it was a bit understated. And he actually then explained to me what I'd learned, and I kept that for the rest of my life. It's being a cross-functional leader. There's so many levels of leadership, But as a brand manager, as a brand leader, you have to be able to lead cross-functionally across different teams. You have to be able to inspire, engage them, and have them help you towards your plan. And I think that cross-functional leadership, even now, it's so crucial. The leaders who are successful, they're just able to have that natural collaboration and suaveness to get things done without creating much friction and naturally integrate all the teams that are needed to get things done. And even as a CMO today, there's nothing I can get done exclusively, very little. I have to be able to connect the teams. I have to be able to connect the cross functions. And P&G really shapes you into being a cross-functional leader from, again, very early. It's an expectation that you need to be able to lead teams. And that's another big skill set that I carry forth with me.
Yeah, I think that's a skill set that I'm still personally developing. And I think that, and what I mean by that is when you first start a company, right, most of my time has been spent at companies, obviously considerably smaller than Procter & Gamble. And so the early days, you're just kind of doing things, right? There isn't a lot of alignment that you need to get. There isn't a lot of like, oh, we need to get this organization kind of moving in the right direction or working together. But it's critically important as a business scales up, right? We're in that stage where we're starting to scale up, where there is a lot of like, it's a lot of work or need for that kind of work. And we're still figuring it out. I think the other thing, I love the point on the kind of customer side of things that you made. And it is shocking how often you get into conversations with people running businesses or involved in businesses, whatever, where like the customer isn't talked about at all, right? Like where they're not the primary consideration, right? Like, where yeah. It's like, oh, well, like, it's almost like the customer is the nuisance, right? That you're trying to solve for. And it's like, it's shocking. There's I think it's the Walmart founder's quote where he said, yes. The customer is the boss and he can fire everybody, including the CEO, right?
Like, yes. Yes, exactly.
So I love that. I love that that is an important part of the ethos at P&G. And it's got to be a big part of the reason why the alumni have been so successful.
No, totally. I think when you realize who your true North Star is, it takes that hierarchy out of the equation. While there was a lot of hierarchy in P&G, what was amazing is when you were in a meeting room, especially the brand manager, it was essentially the brand manager telling the company leaders what to do. And I was shocked how much empowerment they gave at such a relatively junior level. But the brand manager was really considered the voice of the consumer, right? Because if you're managing the brand, who knows the brand and the consumer better than the brand person, right? It has to be the brand manager. And so the GMs would ask you the questions and put the pressure on you and keep it on. But they often knew they didn't know the answers. They didn't know the real whys. And you had to come to the table. And I remember back then with some of our GMs, they would literally be fighting with us and telling me like, TV is too expensive and nobody listens to radio anymore. And this is this. And like, billboards are crazy now. And so you're like, what? Yeah, this is 15 years ago. Like, how many more levers am I left with? No one reads magazines now. So it's like, you can debate that, but we have to get our message out, right? And it was interesting, these conversations you would have, but you'd have to be able to stand your ground. And I think you had to be able to almost fight for it. And I feel like that conviction, sometimes even in like these smaller companies, we've been a little bit softer, right? P&G really, I felt like they really made my skin tough. They made me feel I was empowered, but with that power came a lot of responsibility. And I had to learn how to use that wisely. And so you really did have this founder mindset, which then I later on took with me as I moved to these more founder-led companies and businesses, that they really value your point of view. And it's okay to not have to agree with everything that the founder is saying. It's okay to push back. But what they're really looking for is the logical reasoning behind why you're pushing back. And when they get to that point, they'll actually flip their point of view too. And you just have to build that trust and rapport to get there. So I think there's a lot that P&G really grooms in you that you can take on in the future roles that you move on to.
So similar to what you learned about in terms of, hey, we've got these ads for middle-aged Europeans that we're selling to younger Pakistanis. What have you learned about Thrive Market that surprised you, right? You came in and like, what did you learn about the customers? Like the people that are like the big advocates for Thrive that maybe you didn't expect from the outside.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of things that I didn't really know about Thrive that I learned both in the interview process, but then I also learned coming in that surprised me. One was I just assumed we'd be like coastally stronger, which we are. But when you look at our heat map of where our members are, it is already so dispersed. And it makes sense because that's our mission and we're e-commerce. But I was shocked.
Well, and they don't have access, right? Like, yeah, if you're in the middle of the country, you don't have access to all of these. Yeah.
How dispersed it was incredible. Two, the other thing that really surprised me was who were actually our first equity investors in the company, which again is not surprising when I'll tell you, but initially for the founders, they didn't immediately hit the ground running. They still had some convincing to do that. Is this proposition needed? Should it be funded? And similar to like Honest, they got the initial couple of rejections or speculations. And then they realized, wait a minute, this proposition makes the most sense to like health and wellness influencers. Let's go talk to these experts. And they went to Mark Sisson, who was basically the paleo guru. And Mark was actually the first one to invest in equity in the company. And he not only invested with money, more importantly, he invested with his brand Primal Kitchen. And Primal Kitchen was first launched at Thrive even before it was launched in retail. And that showed you not only how much he believed in it, but how much he trusted the founders too, that they would make this his brand, his baby essentially, successful. And it followed suit that way across. We started off with more niche lifestyles. We're definitely much more pervasive than that too. But Thomas DeLauer is one of our biggest keto experts, has over 2 million followers on YouTube. He partners with us on a level that is just incredible, far and beyond what you would be getting from like a paid influencer. And we have a relationship with him. We have a true partner who has equity in the company, who believes in the mission. He will sit down for hours and do mosh pits with us, brainstorms with us. And the amount of value you get and learning you get from him, it's just incredible. And we have an arsenal of influencers like that that are telling us what's trending, what's changing, what's evolving. And then how can we take that in terms of the products or the innovation? We have our own brand too, which I was very pleasantly surprised to learn is about 25% of our business. So yep. A very sizable, north of 100 million size of business already. And we had over 650 SKUs. And the real intel for that also came with so much data on the third-party brand SKUs that are doing incredibly well. But we also learned where there are gaps in the portfolio. Mm-hmm. Where are they kind of misses? Where can we get better innovation? And we started our own brand with that insight first. And it just took off. And it is still the best-selling product, highest rated, and most affordable as well. So it is a great exclusive membership perk that you get by joining Thrive Market, is this access to these incredible products from our own brand as well.
Yeah, I love that idea. And I think it's something that's very under-leveraged when it comes to the kind of influencer space, is like, you think about, in order to build credibility as a paleo expert or as an expert in anything, right? You have to like, do your research, know what works, know what doesn't, right? Like that's how you build an audience fundamentally. And so using them as a kind of area for innovation or discovery in terms of how do we make this better? What are we missing? What could we do that hasn't been done before? I think it's just fascinating, right? Whether it's a formal kind of collaboration or formal partnership, right? Like we're actually co-selling their products in this case, or it's just like making your existing products better. I think that it's just such a powerful source of information. And the fact that you guys have them as equity partners obviously makes them very supportive of the brand as well, right? Which is a great secondary benefit.
Yeah. In fact, I can't drop the announcement, but I can tease it here. We're actually doing a product development collab with one of our influencers that we're about to launch in just a couple of months. And it has taken us months in the making, but you know, the power of our ability to create high quality products, their expertise in particular lifestyles and spaces, and using that to create Thrive Market co-branded product line is incredibly exciting. And the fact that it's done in like every category in space, but like not really in food. And we're really excited about this collab that's going to come out because we think it's less about the marketing. We really think it's about the best of best brains coming together to create the best possible solutions and products for the members. And so that's what's been so exciting to see that energy on both sides, both our side, but also on the health and wellness influencers that they want to partner with us and create these lines and really figure out what's missing and how to evolve and how to adapt and make it better and give the members the best experience on those products. So very excited about that. But you said that, so I had to tease it. So here we go.
Well, I'm excited to see.
You're the first to know that it's going to happen.
I'm excited to see the announcement for that. And it's funny, there's definitely been, Kevin, an adoption timeline, right? Like the earliest ones were like beauty, fashion, entertainment. Now you're starting to see creators really emerge in the food and beverage space as well, yes. Right? Which it's like you've got Prime with Logan Paul. I think they're at $250 million in revenue in their first year. You've got Terramana, which is Rock's tequila brand. It's like $350 million. It's really fascinating to watch that start to develop, right? I'm so excited to see it. I will not be surprised if it sells out.
We'll make sure we'll grab some for you.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. So I'd actually be curious while we're on this topic of like social media creators, influencers. So in looking at the data on you guys, it was really interesting. Like you had this really significant uptick, and I sent it to you, this graph, right, of your follower count in Instagram starting in January. And what's really, what you may not have context on is if you look at a lot of other brands, Instagram's intentionally doing some trimming right now. Like they are cutting followers that are inactive or bots or whatever. So to see an uptick in the last, call it 5 months, is like very uncommon, 6 months. So I'm curious, do you know why that's happening? If you do, what do you think is driving that? It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Well, firstly, I have to congratulate our social team because they're driving it. We've really invested a lot of time in learning and understanding across all our social media channels, but Instagram in particular, on how do we bring our mission to life? And our mission is, it is complex because it is multifaceted. We're talking healthy living, sustainability. We're talking about affordability and access. And it's been about how do we take all that content, but make it educational, make it inspirational, make it fun, and also make it on trend, which is the hardest thing to figure out because you have to be constantly listening to see what's going on. And I think where we've really gotten it right is the ability to be both listening and quickly creating the content that really matters to get people to share that content faster. And so we're in a space where everybody's shopping, yet if you take a step back, and I'm talking about the education pillar, people don't really know, like, what is the difference between organic, free-range eggs, pasture-raised? I mean, there are all these options out. And I just, some people just default to one. But here's an opportunity where we created an Insta post and actually just educated people on like, what's the differences and like what's worth it.
Yeah.
And it's content like that that suddenly people are like, oh my God, yeah, why am I buying this? Maybe I should buy this. And it's making them just smarter, savvier shoppers. The other thing is, I go back to like this insight with Nick, we would talk a lot about is like, why is healthy always pictured as like untasty? Like healthy, just the minute you think healthy, you think broccoli and you're like, well, the kids aren't going to eat it, you know? Yeah. So we're like, how do we take a spin on that? And so finding powerful, magical ingredients, unexpected ingredients that you can throw into like food that kids will love. And so we have this like reel that just did so well, which was like cottage cheese ice cream. And no one's really doing it.
Why? Cottage cheese is everywhere right now.
Everywhere.
It is
so
like
pick it up, throw it in ice cream, and people like, wait a minute, I got to go try this out. And I got to go share this. So bite-sized, shareable content that was fun. And then the other one that's been working for us, which is kind of like inspiring, is showing them truly behind the scenes of what's going on at Thrive. Like you said, like, what is it like to work at a mission-based company? What is the difference? And so just showing them like the BTS of like what we're doing. So when we went to like Expo West, which is this large industry food and beverage expo, we just took our phones with us and videoed what it was like to be there and to be, what were the big innovations we saw? What did we learn? What did we see? And like, that was powerful because some people may not have gone, but they got the content and then they shared it with other people. And so whether it's like, how do we shoot our ads or how do we make a prep meal or like do one of our content recipes, et cetera, break it down, show them how it gets actually produced and done because we do everything in-house. It just becomes bite-sized content that inspires people and like, okay, this is what it's like to work for a mission-based company. So whenever we're packing boxes, we tell them this is what we do. We're like actually out for the day packing boxes that are going to baby to baby. This is part of our work. Our mission is our work. And I think it's like those types of content that inspire, educate, fun, that are tied to our mission, but also on trend, really got us to see that uptake. And this kind of rinse and repeat is working. We're now working on a new concept, which isn't currently, they're testing it out, but I'm really excited about it. And it's all about Thrive in Five. Like we wanted some ownable content. And the Thrive in Five is all about, again, tied to our mission. Five ingredients, five simple ways, 5 minutes, five power ingredients, whatever it is, all tied to five. To get you your five meals for the week. Boom. So how do we become a destination to help you live easy? And in the summertime, people don't want to be spending all their time cooking. And in general, they don't, right? how can we just help you get it done in a fast, easy way and make it affordable and fun? So I'm really excited about this new concept because then we can be, again, a destination for people to be like, they've got the Thrive in 5. I have 5 minutes. I'm going to cook something fast for the kids or the fam. Like, here's what it takes. So it's finding that, going that next level where you can actually help, educate, inspire all at once. That type of content we've seen really, really work. And it's been the biggest driver for our last 6 months succession.
Yeah, it's like interesting because it's a definite inflection point and consistent, right? The inflection point for you guys. And I think what I love about the content that you're talking about, I kid you not, immediately prior to this, I was having a meeting with our content team, right? We're talking about our content. And it was like, it's got to be like value first, right? What is the value that somebody's going to get out of this, right? And it's like, either we want to learn, right? I want to get smarter, better, whatever, right? So to your point, or it's like, I want it to be fun, entertaining, right? Like TikTok calls this edutainment, right? Like that's the type of content they
exactly.
Yeah, right. And so it makes so much sense to me why the content is working for you in the way that you describe it. And where I think people really screw it up when it comes to both content and particularly owned content is they get really focused on me. What's important to me? What's the message I want to push? What do I want people to know? Like that happens naturally. Like really focus on what value is our customer or the person that follows me on social media actually going to get out of this? And that should be the basis for what you create, not what your particular
what do I like
is for that
course. I totally agree. I think there's an easy, even with looking at marketing, we all kind of go like, oh, well, we like this. It's not what we like though. So what does our consumer want? And like, what is, with social in particular, like to your point, there's just so many choices now that if we're not really stepping up here, it's just easy to get blended in with so many other brands, right? And so to your point, it's really what unique value do you add to their lives that they would singularly want to come to you for? And if you can't figure that out, then you have some thinking to do. But yeah, so kudos. I can't take all the kudos here. It's definitely our social team. They figured it out. And then the other thing is to like rinse and repeat what's working, figure out that format for yourself and continue to drive it. You may have to evolve it, but you know, you quickly start seeing a pattern of what's working.
100%. So let's do one more question and then we'll do like a fun end of show question. So again, I've said it before, but I think your career progression is really impressive. And obviously a lot of the people that listen to this are going to be CMOs, executives, et cetera, but a lot of them are going to be people that aspire to get into the role that you're in today. So I'm curious for people that are younger than yourself, but do look at your path as something that would be ideal for them. What would be your advice to them? What would be your kind of tips, so to speak?
I have tons of advice. I've learned from failure too, by the way. Like you only show your successes, right? You don't talk about your failures, but you learn so much from both sides, right? And to me, I think the most important thing is to always just be self-aware. And it starts from like understanding what capabilities you possess, but more importantly, what capabilities do you need and what capabilities do you want to get to move to the next two levels? And so when I looked at my career, when I was at PMG, and I'll be honest, like I was not a digital expert. I was a very classically trained traditional marketer. I could do digital, but I was not like the game changer digital guru person. I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
And we worked a lot with agencies. We didn't do anything in-house. So we had like a very long process. It worked, but it was all done through agencies and whatnot. And when I looked at what capabilities I need to be a modern marketer, I was like, wow, I need a lot more than just everything I spent like the first half of this conversation. I am by far a classical storyteller. I love telling stories, but I want to tell it in a digital lens. And that was another reason which Honest appealed to me, because they were a modern marketing company that was primarily and only using digital. And I was like, I want to really be an expert there. And Jessica herself is a marketer too, and I want to learn from her. And that was one of the key things for me, is like, I can add a ton of value because here I have the category experience and the CPG experience. I have all this experience, but I'm going to learn e-commerce. I'm going to learn all of these things. And when you start realizing what you need to learn and what you already know, you can sell yourself on what you know. You don't focus on what you don't when you're selling, by the way. So focus on where you can add value. You come in and you immediately add value there. Your leadership or your executive or your board or wherever it is sees that, okay, this person's adding value from day one. And at the same time, you are building your capability on like what I need to know next. And I remember when I did my interview with Nick, the first thing he said to me was, and I don't know, this is an off the record comment, but here, anyways, here we go. was like, I would have never interviewed you if you had not worked at Honest. And I was like, I was stunned that he even said that in an interview. But he's like, well, but given you have like 2.5 years experience already there, that's what makes you interesting for me to visit because you've done both sides, right? So yeah. I was then able to take this other role that I really wanted because I had built that muscle and it was hard for me to build that muscle. And he tested me a lot in the interview on my e-commerce skills, my digital skills, my performance marketing skills. He was, honestly, my last interview felt like he was literally saying, I feel like we're having a performance review. I'm literally talking to you like I would be giving a performance review. And it really felt like that too. Like he really understood me. And I was very transparent in my interviews where I was strong, where I wasn't, what I wanted to learn, what I didn't want to learn. And when I came in, I was not CMO. I came in as SVP. And I came in with half the marketing. So I worked on building, there was no brand. We had to build brand, PR, creative, all those things, which he knew I knew. But he said, yeah. I want you to go build that first before I give you all the other media side, performance side. And then 6 months in, I came back. I said, I've built all of this faster than we thought. We thought it'd take a year. But I'd gotten good at it because I'd done it just at Honest. And so I was able to come back. And here's another big tip is like set expectations, meet them, and then go back and circle the loop. And that's what I did. I went back to him 6 months later and said, here we are where I've completed this task. I'm ready to take on more. And he literally, his only question to me on my CMO promotion is, are you ready? I want to do it when you're ready. And I was like, I am ready. And we went for it. And yeah. So a lot of times I see a lot of leaders come in, they don't even set the expectations on their career. Like first you need to know where you want to go. Then you have to set the expectations. Then your manager has to tell you, okay, here's what I need to see from you. Here's the capabilities. Here's what you have. Here's what you don't. You need to go build this and prove this out to me. And then circle back. It's not easy. I make it sound a lot easier than it is. And I wasn't even sure if I would succeed, but I was determined. And I think that's another big tip. The other one I would say is try to make nonlinear moves. I know it sounds complex and vague, but I still see a lot of people like basically take the same job laterally over and over again. Very, very myopic moves. And I keep asking them, why? You already are an expert here. And I think it's because of this whole capabilities, they think they can't extend into a different genre, right? So I had like actually one of our... Like,
oh, I'm a digital marketer, right? I don't do
exactly.
PR.
Like, how am I going to go into retail? I've only done digital. But what's the capabilities you need? I had a great conversation with someone who's doing search and where could they broaden their career? And we said, what is turning in similar to search? It's TikTok. Why wouldn't you go from search to TikTok? Because TikTok is essentially building those same capabilities. And now suddenly you will broaden. And then from TikTok, go here. And then from here, go here. Like, but that's how you have to start thinking and being able to stretch yourselves to take on, build into new areas and new capabilities while you take the capabilities and can add value. And it's this combination that is really, really important. The other two things I will say that has helped me in my career, and also I have equally failed at it at times, is mentorship. People don't realize, and I think pandemic made it harder. We all got a little bit like de-networked, de-mentored and whatnot. It's so important because you never know who you may be mentoring with or connected with, maybe tapped into someone else and can help you. Like if that's an aspiration brand you want to get tapped into, can do that introduction or be that referral for you or can get you wired. They can also prevent you from making a career hoopla or a big mistake because they may have insight into something that you're just blinded by, or they may make you ask some provocative questions in the interview process. And spend the time to build those relationships, get those networks, build trust and connection. I mean, I didn't just end up at Honest randomly. I did know somebody there who made that introduction and it got the conversation started. So it just doesn't happen like that. You have to find ways to get connected and tap into your network. And at the same time, give back, mentor other people, give back as well. So it's a two-way street that I still see people underutilize. And then last couple of two I have to give is get the support you need. So be really transparent. You know, and I'm saying this more for the younger parents, which I was when I made these moves. Certainly not easy when you're a new mom or you have young kids to make these big switches in careers. Managing dual careers is also not very easy. And the advice I give there is, firstly, it should always work for the family. Whoever gets the better opportunity, it needs to be a family decision that works for all, right? Once you guys make the decision, like in my case, when I made the decision to come to Honest, it was my husband who stepped up and said, okay, the next 6 months is on me. I'll figure out how to move. I'll get all their stuff over. You focus on the job. I could not have done that without him. There's no way I could be moving. And then, you know, then I had the baby. So I had to call my mother-in-law and be like, I can't focus on my baby either. I need help here. And so I was very clear on where I needed help. I always have, because I just don't feel there's like a one man or one woman show that can do everything. And I got the support I needed to help with childcare. I got the support I needed to help us do this. We were in Cincinnati, so we were moving from Ohio to LA, get the move. We had a house also, by the way. I didn't even say that. We had just bought a brand new house. I'd done a whole remodel. Don't even ask me. We had to like rent out our house, sell it. And my husband did all of that work. You can't orchestrate these big moves on your own. You've got to have this support that you need, whether it's your family or you figure out who can help you, so that you're not distracted. The first 6 months of any job are so crucial. People in the first 6 months, unfortunately, they will judge your success already. Particularly in smaller companies, it's probably 3 months now, I feel. The way
or
you
a month,
enter in.
Or a week. It's fast.
Yeah, or a week. The way you enter in is what sets the tone for your career there. And if you can't immediately come in and make an impact and you're distracted or you're dealing with all these other things, you're not going to be successful. And you have to be upfront with yourself that it's not going to be easy at the work front too. And like, I've had late nights with Honest, and I have managed over the course of my career to maintain work-life balance. I was upfront in my career, in my interview conversations with Brian, that I have children now. I can't be work at 9 p.m. And they was definitely okay. Good to know. But you gotta be upfront. Now that comes as you move up and you can explain why. And they also see the impact you have is so big in the time you're working. But this support structure, we forget. We try to do it all. And then we fail, not because of us, but because we tried to do and stretch ourselves in so many which ways, and it was just not humanly possible for us to do it all. And so don't make it humanly possible for you to do it all. And then the last thing I'll close on is we all need to feel inspired. I feel very lucky and blessed to have been born in a family of female leadership where women were doing careers that were difficult and at a time when women probably weren't even being socially accepted into those careers. Like my mom, she was the first female chartered accountant, one of the top first female chartered accountants in the nation. And she had to be segregated from the men because they were like, well, we can't keep you away from the men, so we'll keep the men away from you. It was like crazy. And so she was in isolation and had to study sometimes on her own. I mean, imagine growing up through that level of, we've advanced so much, but that's what she had to go through to become a female chartered accountant. Until this day, she meets men who all know who she is. And she was like, wait, we know each other? It's like, oh yeah, you're Huma Pasha. You used to work with us. And we all knew the woman who was becoming the female chartered accountant. And she laughs about it. She was such an inspiration for me and my aunts. They've all had similar successful careers that I realized that, look, in this world, we really can do anything. There isn't a mold that we have to be molded into. And I remember even when I was doing marketing, a lot of people would be like, marketing? You want a career in marketing? I mean, this is like 15, 17 years ago when they're like, why wouldn't you just, especially in Pakistan, culturally become a doctor or like an engineer? Those were like the two socially acceptable jobs. A marketer? What are you going to do? It is so funny how things have changed and have evolved. But find the people who are going to inspire you. And I've seen that through the companies I've moved through, the founders I've worked through, the mentors I've worked through, my own family. They will make you also believe in yourself and give you that confidence that you can achieve the next big thing.
Well, it sounds like I need you as a mentor. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. Congrats again on all the success. And yeah, and I'm excited to watch you guys kill it at Thrive and continue.
Yeah, well, it's so lovely. I have to call this out that your questions have been the most thoughtful that I've ever received on podcasts. So big thank you to you. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. And I hope for the audience that they find it some useful insights that they can take to action immediately. So big thank you for having me and Thrive Market today.
Of course. Thanks, Amina. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Be a friend, tell a friend, and subscribe. Earned by Creator IQ. Creator IQ is your all-in-one solution to grow, manage, scale, and measure your influencer marketing program. Ready to unlock the power of the creator economy? Get started with a demo today at creatoriq.com.